Hi, everybody. David Donaldson here with another episode of Entrepreneurial Impact. I'm excited to have with me today Scott LeRoy of Scott LeRoy Marketing. And for a lot of our Keller Williams associates, you're probably quite familiar with Scott as he helps so many of our associates and market centers through onboarding and training and getting everybody up to speed. Scott, welcome to Entrepreneurial Impact.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on here. Excited to be here.
Yeah, listen, now for those, now some people know who you are, at least they might know your organization, right? You've been around a little while, but I don't think anybody has seen you face to face. And you and I go back quite some time now. I think you even had hair back then. I'm not quite sure. No, I'm just kidding. I managed to hold on to mine. I don't know how. But Scott, let's just got to give everybody a little bit about you, your organization, and how you got into what you're doing for your small business side of things.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah. So I've been doing this a little bit over a decade now. And it's so funny. I always tell people when I started the company, I had more hair and less weight. So that's the easiest way to see on the entrepreneur side of everything. So
originally impact on you.
Yes, that's the positive and negative impact. started the company really back in the day because the word marketing is in the title. Started it primarily as more freelancing on the marketing side, just reaching out to different local businesses, seeing what we might be able to do to kind of help out. And a Keller Williams office actually took me on to do, this is dating it a little bit. Social media was the biggest trend at that time. Still is now, but not to the extent that some other things are. So started working with them on social media side and then kind of grew from there, pivoting into what are other brokerages, what are other clients potentially looking for, and really just going through and saying, all right, let's help out on the tech side. Let's help out on the support side. Let's help out on the training side. So grew it into what it is now, kind of, you know, working with anything and everything back office oriented, back office solutions, and then obviously external as well too on the whole, you know, digital marketing side, print marketing side, whatever it may be. So a slew of services over the past 12 years now.
You know, and when I look at, you know, it's funny, technology is always such a scary word for many, many people. So much so that I don't even like utilizing it in for business owners, right? Because they're paralyzed making a decision about what technology means. They talk to somebody like me and I'm like, oh, Dave's the tech guy. I'm like, Dave's really not the tech guy. And I almost think sometimes like tech is just like the last four letter word that was left. And they built around that, right? But technology is leverage, right? For business owners. That's where I try to coach them and get them in the mindset. But with technological comes change, comes responsibility. And in the world where technology makes our lives easier, okay, I think many things are overlooked. Now, I do have a little bit of a background in security and having worked with some security organizations and co-owned a couple of those as well. And it's one of those things that I always talk to people that unfortunately is too much of an afterthought, right, than on a forefront, because There's money associated with investing in the unknown, and you know people are terrified. Someone's like, "Well, I'm paying for it's insurance for lack of a better term, it's insurance, right?" People a little worried sometimes about what I pay for security or if I pay for security, I may never need it. Well, the unfortunate sometimes that God forbid you ever actually do, and to what degree does that actually mean, right?
Yeah.
So when I look at an organization's usually, I look at the questions. Let's just kind of start very generally. What type of questions, if any, do you get from agents about security that they should be aware of?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. So my favorite thing that I always like to highlight is that just on the general side, and it's so funny that you said that about, you know, not investing in the security, because it's always one of those things that you don't invest in it until you need it. So I mean, it's basically the exact same thing as insurance at the end of the day. One of the biggest things I always hear is, what are some of the best practices that I can actually do, you know, for my business in order to ensure that everything is secure and safe? And I mean, just starting on the very basic side, especially things that are available to any consumer as well too, just, you know, going through and having, whether it's a firewall, whether it's antivirus software, malware software, whatever it might be, just ensuring that you have that set up on you. I mean, I know whenever you purchase any type of computer or anything, you're getting typically a year free of, you know, insert name of antivirus right. platform. And then there's also free options that are available out there as well, too. If you have a PC, it comes with, you know, a version already included on there. Running that on a regular basis is just one of the simplest things that you can do. The other thing is really just going in and seeing, like, if you are running your own small business and maybe you're utilizing some, you know, additional external tools, you know, who has access to this as well? You know, so if you're going into that and saying, here's the control of, you know, for my email, for my website, for, like we're talking about before, social side, anything that is your digital footprint, who has access to that? And then more importantly, if something does happen, or if there's a bad actor or something occurs, you need to remove access. What are the protocols and how quickly can you actually remove that? And then I'll probably say that the final thing on there that I always love to talk to everyone about is, how are you backing up your data in case something occurs? So I always tell anyone I chat with, bare minimum, back up everything on a 30-day basis. Just have a month worth of data on there saying, you know, hey, if it is, you know, geez, November 30th or whatever it might be, then on December 30th, we're going to back it up again too. Just have that cadence going so you know that you've got everything prepped and ready to go. We do it a little bit more intensely over here. We back up everything on a daily basis, but in this case, at least having a monthly log will help out tremendously. So those are probably my top three things that I always encourage everyone to take advantage of just on a very generalized option.
Yeah, those are all great starting points, right? And when I talk to agents, especially on the real estate side of things, right, I think the starting of like understanding that each individual licensed agent is a small business, right? I think that's something that's missed on a lot of people, and that they overlook, hey, what am I responsible for security? So you're touching in, right? And this is, you know, like saying, hey, step one, you don't have to have a brick and mortar location as an individual. You may show up at one. But you're traveling around with a laptop or a phone, right, or something that's got sensitive data to it. What is your regular protective software looking like? Whether it's one of those, like you said, insert companies. Secondarily, password protection. It sounds simplistic. I think people figure cybersecurity and they think sexy protocols. They think of like Mission Impossible and Tom Cruise dropping down in the clean room, right? Because that's like, oh, there's a coolness factor. But the thing is, when we think about security and vulnerabilities, it's much more basic and boring than that. When we can really kind of look at the most damage that can be done in like a phishing situation. Let's talk to phishing first, and then we can talk about security mechanisms around it. Define phishing for the audience.
Oh, so define, oh man. Yeah. So phishing in this case, I always think of it, well, first and foremost, I want to highlight on the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible one as a claw machine fan on there, one of my favorite scenes of all time on it. So I just wanted to highlight that for you. So thank you for bringing that up.
Well, I think when everybody hears cybersecurity, I think, well, those of us at a certain age anyways, that's kind of where they're going to go to, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. So phishing in the simplest of terms is anyone trying to attack, access, or basically steal your data from you in a way that you may or may not know about. So it could be that they're a bad actor trying to access your backend accounts. It could be someone that's sending out, like you'll see multiple times, emails or text messages getting to you, basically saying, hey, please contact for this information because we need this. Otherwise, we're going to shut down X account. So you'll see it all the time. And some of them are easier to notice. You know, they stand out and you're like, oh, that's definitely a phishing attempt. And you might see it consistently in your spam inbox, or outside of that, you know, you'll receive a lot of text messages or even phone calls of people trying to hack into whatever it might be. I hate using the word hack on there, but they might just be trying to get inside your account. So I always tell everyone, if you are suspecting that something might be a phishing attempt, go with your gut feeling.
That is where I'm at. I get calls or emails almost daily from people saying, hey, I think this is phishing. And I'm like, they're like, what do you think? Or they say, hey, I got this lead, but I don't know where it came from. That trust your gut literally is your first level of security defense. Question everything.
Yeah, 100%. And it's so funny because I'll see some that come through and I'm like, and they're very sophisticated. There are some that are like, wow, this is very close. But from seeing everything for years now of, hey, this is what I should be looking for. This is what's occurring out here. Like even the simplest thing at the end of the day is if you're getting an email, for instance, check who the sender actually is because you can change the name on that sender anytime. But then once you actually look at it, all right, well, what is this email address? I've never seen this before. You know, so that immediately is, all right, well, this is a fake one coming through. But then at the same time, like you said, if you feel like something is off, even just a little bit, trust your gut and just double check with other people. So I love the fact that you said people are coming to you saying like, hey, I think this is a phishing attempt on here. So they immediately trust their gut. They went to a respected resource and then got that validation of, yes, it is a phishing attempt, avoid. And also, thank you for bringing that on here, because if you're receiving this, especially in you know, your position on here, you might be able to use your voice to get it out to other people and say, hey, this is a phishing attempt. Let's get on top of this and play defense, or play offense in this case instead of defense. So now we can get in front of everyone before this becomes a more widespread issue.
Right, because the truth of the matter is, I think if you look, like you referenced the spam inbox, everybody gets them every day to some degree, right? It's just a matter of where are they coming from and what's the target audience, right? And sometimes we're larger organizations in an industry where there's a lot of money changing hands. So we're obviously a prime target to try and a barrier of entry. And a lot of people say, hey, to me right away, like, well, what do I do if I clicked on it? Because I think you brought up a good point. They've gotten more sophisticated, right? It's no longer a really badly, poorly written email from somebody from somewhere else looking to spend billions of dollars and buy something or asking for mass amounts of gift cards to get them out of a jam, right? I mean, I always like, hey, listen, trust and verify, you know, hang up, don't respond, get online, call them directly, whatever that needs. But otherwise, sometimes people do just get drawn in, because if you look at where we are, artificial intelligence, the advanced nature of things that are easier to do and replicate, it is getting trickier. You and I have done this for a while, so we have a little bit more of a keen eye, right? And I think things jump out a little differently for us. We're just not necessarily looking for them. They jump out to us. And a lot of unsusceptible business owners that don't have that background are prey. Right. And that's why these things work at the level that they do, because they're easy. They're a low barrier of entry. They don't cost a lot to do. And the damage that can be done can be massive. So on the backside of that, people always say to me, David, what should I do if I clicked on something? So the first thing I always say, besides trusting your gut, good job, go change your password. Passwords are always an interesting thing for people, because we like easy. We don't like hard. And I reference a lot of times, I'll talk about real estate contracts. At some point in time, they were written on a stone tablet and they were one page, right? Now they're anywhere from 18 to 20 something pages because of security. That's a large component of that, and lawyers, but we don't want to get in that route. But security is a large component of why things have gotten longer. And you could chalk up password, right? Security, you know, dynamic passwords, right? Or passphrases. Let's talk about the importance of passwords. How do you explain that? People say, hey, I get that 12 characters is a lot, but let's talk about why.
Yeah. And it's so funny, because the longer the password or passphrase, the harder it is for someone to actually be able to access your account. And I was looking at statistics the other day, and unfortunately I don't recall them, so I apologize. But we were going through, what is the likelihood with the longer the password that someone will actually be able to access your account? And for each character that you start to add on, it becomes so insignificant that they're not going to be able to get inside there. So at least having, I know industry standard used to be 8 characters, now you're getting to 12. I'd be shocked if we don't see 15, 16 in the near future. And then probably all the way up to 20 on there. So like you're saying, having a passphrase instead of just a password will help out tremendously, because even myself directly, you know, I love myself a nice little computer generated password. You cannot memorize that to save your life. And if you can, good on you, because that is not the easiest thing in the world by any means. But I also know that, like you're saying, passwords, previously people would just say, all right, well, what is my password going to be? And then the biggest issue I also see is that they'll utilize it across multiple platforms, which you never want to do. So in this case, having a passphrase like, I love real estate, you know, whatever it might be, having multiple words connected, and that's also even just a very general one, so I wouldn't suggest using that one, but something even of...
Grant, I'm going to change my password now, Scott. Thanks for sharing with us.
that was it. There was nothing else. No special characters, no numbers, nothing. So even just having, like, I have two dogs named, you know, Blake and John, whatever it might be. Those are not the two dog names that we have over here. Those would be fantastic names, though. You know, and then 2019 exclamation point or something like that. like something that's easy for you to remember, lengthy, so it's going to be very hard for someone to actually be able to figure out, but then more importantly, that you'll be able to actually add in there very quickly. Because I personally use, and if you have, I can't speak to Android users because I'm an iPhone user.
So hey.
I'm glad to know we have an Android user on here, but there we go. So on my iPhone, obviously I have a password locker on there. I also, our company invests in password lockers as well too. So I have everything saved. So me having to memorize my passwords is a moot point in this case because I have my password locker that is, you know, two-step authenticated. I'm able to get inside. I can just automatically populate it, which is fantastic. But having that passphrase is going to help out. And I think we're going to see a trend in the industry where a lot of people are going to move towards that instead of just having a standard password or going through and doing the stock password that they think is okay of capital P, @, money sign, WORD, anything like that. Like you're spelling out words with different symbols on there. And don't get me wrong, at one point in time, perfect. That was fantastic, you know, and not a lot of people are going to know about that. But now they're getting privy to everything. So I think the passphrase is going to become something very beneficial, especially as those password requirements get longer and longer on here as well, too.
Yeah, you touched on multi-factor authentication. And again, I try not to take these things to a degree that makes it complicated, but it is what the word says it is, right? It's two types of validation. And a lot of times I think I'll break it down to that something you know and something you have, right? So yeah. For those of you that are listening, it's a passphrase or password, right? And sort of secondary validation, right? Which may be like those codes that you get on your cell phones, like click on accept, or hey, I need you to enter these numbers into the device that you're logging in from, right? So we can validate the IP address, which is like, hey, this is me signing in from my computer. People don't get that. They think it's hard because again, I'll go back to the easy button things, but guys, don't make it easy for them. Secondly, you touched on access, right? There's two types of access for a lot of people. One, who has access because I have a platform that I use. So I have access to it. So who on the company side has access and what are their vulnerabilities? Not just mine, right? My access point. Do I have a team of agents or administrative personnel, associates, assistants, right, that are all logging in? I know people, and this will resonate with some people, that have 3 or 4 people that are using the one user's login credentials. What could possibly go wrong in that situation?
A lot. So that's a lot to unpack on there. So yes, so for the multi-factor authentication, you hit the nail on the head with it because you're usually going to have in the back end. And I always tell everyone, if you're setting up two-step authentication, first and foremost, the two biggest ones they're always going to ask about are, you know, one, do you have an email that you want to link up on here? Then you're going to get a code, sync the email so you can access it in case you ever get locked out. Or do you have a phone number on there? Or like you said, one of the biggest ones we're usually seeing now is where it's going to an authenticator app. It'll give you 30 seconds. Here's a 6-digit code. You can put it inside as well too. Those are usually the three biggest options that I always see on here for two-step authentication. And even though it's not the easy button of being able to get inside, on a great note, once you do it once, most platforms will say, all right, don't ask me again for this in the next 30 days. So doing it once, even if it's then just saying, hey, over the next 30 days, I'm safe on here, it's okay, at least 12 times a year, you're basically saying, all right, let's just double check and make sure it's myself and no one else is trying to access this. But then on the other point that you're talking about of people having multiple access to your accounts, to your devices, to whatever it might be, I always suggest going through and one, having a list of anyone and everyone that has access to it. Because the other fun part about it is if someone has access to that password, so that I keep using the term bad actor on here, and this is basically just someone that is trying to get into your account to potentially do something malicious. And you never want anyone to be in that category by any means. But if something happens, you know, there is the chance that, you know, maybe someone is leaving, it's not leaving on good terms, or maybe they are a bad actor and they're sharing that password or passphrase with someone else who could be doing something malicious on there. So in this case, knowing who has access to everything at what time, what permission level they have access to as well, and then just the ability to go through and change your passwords as often as possible. If something is happening and maybe there's an adjustment occurring on your team or on your business, whatever it might be, immediately change every password possible and ensure that you have, whether it's on a password locker or even if you just have like, hey, here's the documentation that I have of the different locations of all my passwords and all the accounts that I need to change in case something happens. Having that plan ready to go will help out tremendously. And I normally suggest changing passwords every 90 days. That's kind of the industry standard on there. Once again, like I was talking about before with 12 characters being the industry standard now, I can imagine we're going to see as the password and passphrases character limit increases, the amount of time that you have to change the password is probably going to decrease. So I can imagine seeing 60 days as the industry standard, then 30, then who knows, maybe 2 weeks or so, or heck, in the near future, maybe it's just all, you know, purely biometrics. You never know.
I mean, look, there are people that I've talked to said, hey, I've used the same password for 25 years. Well, that's not a cool thing. That's a challenge, right?
It is.
Writing it down on a sticky note or in pencil on your laptop, not the best idea, right? Yeah. Whenever possible, right? If you have a team of people, make sure that they – look, I get there's an expense to additional seat licenses, right, or additional users on an account. But the dynamic impact of what your information is susceptible to, right, is not worth the risk of sharing your credentials. And then compound that with, like you're saying, a lot of people use the same password for multiple things. So they may quickly realize that you're using this password for this and three other things that they're accessing on your behalf. Now, it may be all the well-intentioned in the world when they join your organization, but unfortunately in business, separation happens all too often. And while they came in with the best intent, they may not leave with the best intent. And they do things as they're walking out the door. I wish it was just slamming of the door, but a lot of times it's not. So again, all of these things we're talking about, I'm going to bring back to our systems, right? And let's talk about documentation, right?
Yeah.
Should I document my processes of how I do things? And should I tie these things also to if there's a turnover in my staff? Like all these things people, I think, overlook. If I do change somebody, what's the first thing I should do? Change a password.
Yeah. Oh, easily.
Right?
Yeah. And I always say over-document everything possible because you want to have your standard operating procedures or I just say SOPs on there. So that way, like you said, if there is a little bit of turnover in staff, if something occurs, if you need to make immediate adjustments, you know exactly where everything is, what needs to be done on here. So having any type of documentation or checklist on there is going to be extremely crucial. And heck, even in this case, just knowing what you're going to do on a daily, weekly, monthly type basis will help out tremendously. So the more that you can over-document, and the biggest thing on there is make sure that whatever documentation you have is also shared with proper people or that it's under lock and key where, you know, you have to have, you know, the actual access to get inside there. And it's not just public facing. You never want it to be public facing on here. That is one of the biggest things I'll highlight.
Yes.
But having that documentation will help tremendously.
You know, all this is just, and I hope everybody's taking notes here, like literally document is important and procedures like, and everything we're talking about is a very low barrier of entry for cost efficiency across all these things. When we talk about like key loggers and password access and multi-factor, these things are very, very inexpensive to enact in your business. And we're not talking about major server storage. We're not talking about a clean room. We're not talking security keypad access to your office. We're talking about something as simple, like I remember early on, I was talking to a police officer and they were telling me that, hey, you know, most home invasions are deterred simply not even having security in your home, but just having the sign in your yard. Right. Yeah. So, hey, is it worth me questioning whether this person has this company as a security company? The sign says they do. Do I want to risk it or do I want to go to the next one? That's the same type of concept here. You put those things in place to protect you, right? Those procedures, password changes, right? And then the other things that have to come into play, whatever platforms you're using in your business, right? You need to understand that to a degree, because then there's another side of it. How does it impact my business if my systems go down, right? Because our partners sometimes might have an issue that affects my business. Can I run my business? Well, so let's talk about that for a minute. What steps should I take to know how to run my business if I can't gain access to something?
Yes. Yeah. If certain things go down, it can be detrimental to your entire livelihood that day, basically. And it's so funny that you brought up the police officer talking about the sign on there as well, too. So for my security system that I have, they gave us a, and it took a while for this to happen, but they gave us a free sign. And the first thing I was like, yep, I'm taking it immediately. It's like, I'm putting that out here. I've had it out in front of my home ever since they were able to give it to us on here. And it's helped out because ironically enough, and it's horrible saying this, but the home across the street from myself had something stolen from them. And I was actually able to see everything from our security camera. And I can imagine now that you're saying that, because my sign was out there and lit up, they may have avoided our home just because of that. You know, you never know.
You don't know. And that's the investment in security without knowing is security actually doing its job versus not adding anything at all.
Yep. And that's, and back to your other point on there, just investing in even something as simple as separate email addresses for everyone on my team. If you're going through a platform like Google Workspace, through Outlook, whatever it might be, it's a minimal cost for the peace of mind that it's going to provide. And that's the best part about it. And then you can actually start to restrict access, or as the admin, be able to take over certain items. But so back to the question on the action plan on there. I apologize. I just wanted to highlight that.
Reaffirming those points, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So top three things on action plans, because I can go way in depth on this. But one, just make sure you identify the critical systems that you need access to on a daily basis in order to ensure that your entire team or entire business is running smoothly. This could be whether it's, you know, in the real estate side, a CRM, a website. It could be if you're on small business side, maybe it's your online payment portal, you know, anything of that sort. I'm sure everyone recalls back in, I want to say it was June or July, when there was the massive Microsoft outage that occurred. And that affected a lot more than what people were anticipating, including airports, I recall. So luckily I was just driving that day, but it was an interesting time.
Yeah.
So one, just identify what you need access to immediately. Develop a communication plan. So in this case, know who is going to reach out to potential clients saying like, hey, something is down right now. We're working to get this back up as quickly as possible. If this is something that's going to affect them as well too, and especially on the real estate side, if you're utilizing a website, an app, anything that might be consumer facing, you want to ensure that you're getting in front of them as quick as possible. If it is going to be a longer outage than anticipated, just so they're not looking at it saying, hey, something might be going on here. Now, don't cause, you know, any type of terror just to cause terror. So remember, you know, what I'm saying on this one is communicate only what needs to be communicated. Don't over communicate or anything of that sort, because obviously
that's tricky, right? I know a lot of times they think over communication is the key, but unfortunately, I'm not telling you to hide things. I think there's a clarification. I'm going to preface this first and foremost. If you're not sure, ask somebody. Get guidance, talk to a lawyer, have some sort of expert, right? Or have clarity in your mind about what you're presenting. That's first and foremost, I want everybody to hear that. I'm going to highlight that. I want to bold that. Okay. If you're concerned, seek information. Okay.
Yes.
This is not the all end all be all here. Okay. Go to a proper channel and say, hey, do I need to disclose? Do I need to know what I need to do? But do that in advance so you have a plan. Two, you need to understand the difference between access and a breach, and a breach to sensitive material that puts your consumers versus you potentially at risk. And that varies from person to person, that varies from the systems that you're using, that varies to softwares that you're using. All of that matters, and you have to have a clear understanding of what that looks like.
Yeah. No, you really do, because at the end of the day, if it's, and going back to that on there, of not spreading, you know, potential information or just, you know, terror to spread it. In this case, going through and seeing what should I share, what shouldn't I share, and then also reinforcing like, hey, we're working on everything immediately to get this back up and running. You know, end with that call to action of we're working on your behalf to get this fixed. We want to make sure this is back up and running to give you the best experience possible. And like you said, especially before, assign roles over to people inside the company. I mean, designate obviously the team members that are going to work on certain things. Make sure you have that hierarchy on there. And one easy way to actually go through and avoid this is just to kind of have regular testing, you know, go through and conduct scenarios. You know, it reminds me of being back in school and doing fire drills, you know, so it's basically the exact same thing in this case. Just going through and prep and just having that testing option on there to say, if this happens, what occurs? So the more that you practice, the more that when the performance occurs, and I hate calling it performance, but going back to, you know, my fun music days, the more that we practice, the better the actual performance was. So in this case, God forbid something happens, you're ready to go and you know exactly what's going to happen.
Well, because when we talk about access, or whether it's a security breach or phishing or whatever, or there's also the other side of it, because they're not always just data is currency. That's why they do what they do, right?
Yeah.
Then on the other side of it, there's a disruption of service type of challenge. So that's kind of what we dove into a little bit here is like, what happens if there's a disruption in service because of your relationship or other partners? Because the more larger organizations grow, the more that we utilize and the more we depend on them, the easier it is to affect a lot of avenues, right? Because things spider out from a hub. So then, like, I'll break this down from a very large hospitality background on my side, right? When power outages would go down, or micros terminals would go down, or our computer systems would go down, how do we get payment? We had to go back to credit cards, paper, right? That's kind of a degree that I need you to think about when we're talking about how do you deal with a disruption in service is how do you go on? So you led this off as we start to wrap and said, hey, do you have a backup, right? So I want people to think these through. Like, technology is great. Hullover, as dependent as we become on it, is scary and challenging, right? Do you have a hard backup of your database, right? If it's in the cloud and AWS is down, I might not be able to access my backup. But if I have my database backed up on a, I don't even know if I'm going to say Buffalo Drive. I don't know if it's still a thing anymore. I'm going to database a little bit. But an external hard drive, right? There's different levels. If you say you back up daily, weekly, monthly, that might be to the cloud. But do you bump back up monthly, biannually to an external hard drive, right, that is in an internal safe in your house that you can access? Again, cheap protocols that protect you to gain access to your information if I need to work outside of the systems because there's a disruption in service.
Yeah. And it's so funny. And I didn't anticipate this coming full circle on here, but it's fantastic it did, because the data backup is one of the biggest things that I highlight over here as much as possible. And it's especially from certain things, like even from our website, there are certain plugins that you can utilize that will automatically back everything up for you. But like you were saying, most of that backup will go to a specific cloud server, so like you're talking about with AWS, or if you're hosting it over, even just on Google Drive, whatever it might be, or in Dropbox, anything on there. But not having access to that, what happens when that goes down as well too? Well, then you don't have access to anything. So in this case, going through and having that external option is never a bad idea, whether it's on an external hard drive, heck, even on your computer, whatever it might be, just having that, you know, I don't want to say physical or tangible item, because obviously you're not going to be able to touch it in here, but it feels almost like it's physical because it's not based off of another platform on there. And then even if there is a major system disruption, you touched on this fantastic in the hospitality side, having like a business continuity, you know, plan on there of if this goes down, here's our process. So it's really kind of like I always call it a choose your own adventure book of, all right, well, if we're going through and then all of a sudden the entire terminal goes down, here's what happens next. If the terminal does not go down, great, here's where we're going. And then hopefully at the end of the day, it comes back up and you can go back to plan A. But having that plan B, C, D in order is just going to help to make sure that the businesses are running, or your business is running smoothly, even if something does occur. And so having that continuity plan is detrimental. It's going to be different for each business depending on what industry you're in, what tools you're using, what software, hardware you're using, and obviously, you know, some other potential external factors as well too.
Well, listen, Scott, I really appreciate you joining us today on a really important topic. I remember coming off the heels of what was Cybersecurity Month, right? That was October, and we're just a little bit in November, but that's okay. I hope for those of you that are listening, take this conversation to heart. Like, this is not, I hope, you know, I'm not telling you to document everything we did, but I want you to start a conversation. I want you to look at your procedures, because I think, unfortunately, a lot of people don't have them. I want you to start asking questions of yourself and your business partners about, hey, how are we handling these things? How are you handling those things? What should I be doing internally, right? Look at things that we talked about, multi-factor, right? Password generators, right? What barriers of security do I have in place? What type of external systems do I have if I have a disruption of service? And how do I react if, by goodness, something or somebody act something into me with malicious intent. Well, Scott, thank you for joining us. Everybody else at home, have a great week. And we look forward to the conversations that you're having, and join us on another episode of Entrepreneurial Impact next week. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.